What is, I just had to connect, this is the third device I had to use. Mark's, we're back in Mark's garage, connect to his internet. And I was like, which one is your internet? What's your, when it shows you the user and
the
it's
name
like,
of the internet connection.
Yeah. And it's like, what is it, Mark? The
next door to the mean old lady.
Yeah.
Next door to the mean
old
lady.
Are you next door to the mean old lady? He's like, yeah, that's me. All right. Welcome back to Somebody Likes It. And, this week we have a new guest.
It's true. Matt Munoz.
Matt Munoz.
Hello, hello, hello.
How are you, Matt?
I'm well. Thank you, gentlemen, for having me.
Oh, I'm happy that you're here. I hear you on the radio all the time. Matt books music for a club here in Austin.
A kind of legendary club.
It is legendary, yeah. So he's...
Cactus Cafe on the UT campus.
I thought you said Tactless Cafe for
the
a second.
The Tactless Cafe,
it
yes.
can be at times.
That sounds like a...
Well,
fucking...
when Griff was running it sometimes, yes.
Wow. Not even a minute
that's,
in.
That's
there we
a really
go.
Apt thing, man. off the inside jokes. So Matt runs this, and then he's often on the radio discussing the upcoming acts. And every time I hear you, because you and I have known each other for... 20 years.
Yeah,
a long time.
World.
Almost as long as Ryan and I. I met him not long after you.
You and I met in 93?
A long time ago.
92,
yeah.
93?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. I'm sure that's fascinating
and Matt
to
was,
everybody
else. Like, gracious enough when I was like lonely in Los Angeles to like take me out and...
What show did we go to? It was at the Troubadour.
It was at the Troubadour.
Was it
Built
to Spill?
Built to Spill.
That's
yeah.
what it was. Yeah.
And they didn't have to play a club that small.
Yeah.
But you were working for Warner Brothers, which was their label.
Yeah, yeah.
And like it was amazing. Like I had a great time. And as I recall, we also went to a bar where I was able to get a Shiner for $3, which in L.A. is unheard of. Both
oh,
of
that's
things.
Right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, Matt, when you were living in L.A., every time I would come out and visit you, you always would have like your finger on the pulse of great little dive bar. Because Los Angeles, say anything you want about that city, it is a fucking town of amazing dive bars. That's the one thing it's really got going for it. In the little, you know, little villages
the
around
one thing.
It.
Yeah. No, I'm kind of with you on that.
It's got great dive bars.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, guys. So we're going to go ahead and get to the show here. Thanks again for joining us, Matt. And I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Mark.
And that's Matt.
Hey!
This is Somebody Likes It.
So, Shane, you had something current event related.
I do. I'm going to touch on something that we discussed a couple of weeks ago. But first off, before I do that, I do want to comment on Mark's getting more of Kevin's forceful pointing at us when we're ready to go.
I kind of caught shit last week.
The TV producer thing.
Like. I'm going to start doing the count.
I was going to say, you still don't do the count like Kevin does.
You can't be ambiguous about
three and
coming. Yeah.
Yeah. We won't know. We'll just sit here and be in the middle of some shitty joke.
Yeah, well, after I had to edit out a bunch of just random comments while you guys were waiting for me to point at you, I decided I'd be a little more forceful this week.
Time to grab control of the reins.
Okay, so a couple of weeks ago, we discussed Scott Stapp's slide into insanity. And today,
well, let's be fair. He was already insane. And now he's just more insane.
Well, he was a dick, and he put out a lot of shitty music. But well, okay, I'm just going to read this headline to you. And so what happened was, a few weeks ago, we were discussing his wife had filed for divorce, and in the divorce filings, she had included a bunch of texts that he had sent her. One of which is that the CIA probably created Alcoholics Anonymous. ISIS was coming for his son and his son's middle school, so they had to go to
True.
Georgia to hide. A bunch of stuff like that. And then he got on Facebook and had this rambling, like 15-minute long conversation with the camera about how the CIA had embezzled all this money from him and all this stuff, and all the while denying that he's not sober. Anyway, I get up. Get on the computer earlier today, and I come upon this headline. Secret Service is looking into Scott Stapp's alleged threats to assassinate Obama.
Perfectly rational. makes every bit of sense.
He's alleging to have threatened Obama?
So it gets better. But first off, let's just... Do you think that...
The President Obama, not some random guy named Obama?
Not some dude. Obama. You
know. Fred Obama.
Fred Obama Smith that lives...
And he's got his own group of like friends, and they just call themselves the Secret Service because it's funny. So I wonder if all of this Scott Stapp nonsense is going to, when Creed inevitably gets back together, will it hurt or help ticket sales?
Well, they say there's no such thing as bad publicity.
Yeah, that's true.
This is a long setup for a brand new Creed record, is what I'm feeling.
Oh, yeah. That's
dude, Charlie Sheen has a thriving career. He went super off the rails.
Yeah.
I think the kids call it viral marketing nowadays.
We used to just call it fucking crazy, but
yeah.
So I'm going to read you a sentence from this article. This past Friday, TMZ added to the confusion by posting a 911 call made by Stapp's wife in late November, in which she claims Stapp was cruising neighborhood streets while shirtless on his motorcycle, claiming to be on a CIA mission to, quote, assassinate Obama.
Oh, my
Sounds
God.
About right.
Amazing.
I can't even talk anymore. Can you just imagine him just popping wheelies
shirt?
Because I'm sure he lives in a gated community, and he's just going up and down the street.
The gated community is his own prison.
Wow.
That was good. So anyway, but apparently, you know, then he calls, and then he grabbed the phone from her. And I looked this up, by the way, on TMZ. I didn't listen to the call, but I was curious how long the phone call was, the 911 call. 40 minutes. And I don't know if that's both of them, because then he grabs the phone from her, I guess, makes his own 911 call, claiming that he was on his motorcycle only because his wife had stolen his car. That doesn't say anything about the shirtless or the Obama assassination threats.
All I have to say is this would be really, really sad if I didn't hate Creed and the state of Florida in general just so much.
You know what? That's pot calling the kettle. You realize we live in Texas.
It's true. It's true. But we do live in the little blue mole on the red face of Texas.
Yes. All right. So that's what's up with Scott Stapp as of right now. And I just
thank you. And I was losing sleep wondering what was going on with that guy.
Oh, and so he had. Oh, by the way, so he put up a new video on Facebook, where his face is just in the camera again, and he said all of this stuff. And it's been taken down again, like his other one was. But in this one, somebody transcribed it before it was taken down. And there's a postscript at the end of it. It says, P.S. I have nothing but sincere respect, love, and admiration for President Obama. The recent report claiming I'm delusional and claiming I'm a CIA agent with evil intent toward our beloved president is a joke.
That's a good joke, Scott Stapp.
It was good enough when he was just riding up and down the street shirtless on a motorcycle.
That's funny in and of itself.
That's what
man.
I'm saying.
But what if he is a secret double agent?
That's such a great idea.
Dude, I think you should pitch this.
What if we're just laughing at this poor schmuck at the same time he's setting this up for some
I think Martin Scorsese
crazy plot
take this
later
run
on.
With it.
That would be a crazy twist.
You know, he's got a lot of minions out there that follow the music, and
that's true. I've seen them.
Speaking of music, should we speak of music?
Yes, let's talk about this week's album. It's yours this week, Ryan.
It is mine. So I chose LCD Sound System's second record, Sound of Silver. And we are going to talk about it.
Do you think that they named the record Sound of Silver because it's really hard to say a bunch of times fast?
No.
Because
no, I don't. But I also have zero idea why they named it Sound of Silver, because that is the shittiest song on the record.
That was the one. We'll get to that in a little bit. But is that your art turd, if you will, for this one, for this record?
It is the art turd on the record.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine. I can only think of one other record where they named the album after the shittiest song, and that's Meat Is Murder by the Smiths.
You know what? You were right about that. That is the shittiest song on that record.
But he at least was trying to make a point.
That's the shittiest Smiths song, period.
Yeah, maybe. It's hard for me to sit through a recent Morrissey tour and watch that whole promo video of all the animals getting slaughtered. And it's just like, you know.
Hey, man, vegans, vegetarians, like PETA, God love you. It's a good thing that you're doing, and I don't object to it at all.
It's too much for me, and I haven't eaten meat in 20 years. But that we're off topic.
Yeah. Anyhow, yes, shittiest song on the record, Sound of Silver. Name of the record, Sound of Silver.
And also, sound is in sound system. Like, it's just... It's an odd pick for an album title, if you ask me.
Beyond that, though, I genuinely love this record.
I knew you were going to say that. That's crazy. Crazy, crazy.
I knew you were going to hate it.
No, yeah. I don't hate it. I don't hate it. I don't get it. Well, you know what? I do get it. I get it more than I thought I was, but because
I don't think it's 100% unflawed, but I think it's genuinely good through most of it.
It's a dance record. That's why you think that. It's dance punk, which is what they
say on the Wikipedia page, which I'd never heard that term before.
It's grating, and it's too clever for its own good by half, I think.
Expound.
Well, I mean, it starts off with this fucking... Number one, why can the guy not... There's one song on it that's under 4 minutes, most are over eight minutes.
This is what I thought you might have a problem with. He doesn't write traditional pop songs. He doesn't use the pop format.
No,
they're still kind of poppy.
I mean, yeah.
Pace refers to it as a pop album.
Yeah, I mean, it is a pop song, but there are pop songs, but I can't figure out if.
I think when people start throwing out just the pop label itself, that's just a lazy writer saying, "I don't know what the hell to fucking call this thing."
Yeah,
so it's
and
pop,
I don't know what you would
that
call
way.
This. Like this isn't there isn't a genre for what
yeah.
they're doing here or he's doing here. Let's talk about this.
A little druggy.
It's made for potheads
yeah. and people that dance.
Yeah,
you know, it's definitely a marijuana record. I mean, without a doubt.
Okay, well, I don't smoke weed, and I like it.
It doesn't. You don't have to smoke weed to. I mean, there's lots of. I don't smoke weed, and I love Pavement, and they were like the defined the term stoner band, you know, in the 90s. But it's extremely repetitive. The songs are extremely long. There's not a lot of change stylistically. I mean, whatever. You know, it's one of those things. Like I said, I don't hate it. I don't get it. It's just because it's my taste. Like, but I do get it in the sense that especially the first couple of songs on there, the beats are great. They're really addictive. But then it's just the same shit over and over again with this tongue in cheek. Like, is this a joke? Like, Talking Heads called. They really want their fucking sound back. Except they wrote songs that got to the point and then just drag.
Loving this right now.
Tell us how you really feel.
Yeah, no, I'm loving this.
You're really hating on it.
I just couldn't disagree more. Let's lay down a couple things. LCD Sound System basically is a dude. It's James Murphy.
In the same way
that Nine Inch Nails is Trent Reznor. Right. Like, LCD Sound System is James Murphy. And then he recruits musicians to tour with him and, you know, fill in some vocal parts or whatever. But it's basically one guy. But what I think he does better than anybody that I've come across is that he makes electronic music sound organic, and he's able to use tension to like build a song.
It's not all electronic though.
Well, I mean, it's not. No,
it's
he mixes like sort of organic parts with electronic stuff to create something that I frankly haven't heard before, and to me is super intriguing. Not all of it works, but enough of it does that I'm pretty blown away by most of this record.
I like about half of this record.
Yeah, I think it peters out at the end, and we'll talk about that.
Yeah,
later.
And I mean, the one thing though that I was very impressed with throughout the entire length of this album is how clean it is. The production value of this album.
Oh, it's so well produced.
Top notch.
Well, he's a producer and he produces his own albums. Yeah. That there's something to be said for that, but it also gives him a lot of leeway for self-indulgence, which he definitely grabs onto.
Certainly, you know, he doesn't
have a self-indulgent.
He does not
record.
Have anybody telling him no. But I think that cuts both ways.
I think for me, it's one of those records that's kind of a stopgap in the creative process to this guy that you can kind of see right before they get to the end of LCD Sound System that kind of is there It's not a monumental record. You know, they don't have a large catalog or anything, but I think it's one of those things he probably had to make to get to the next step before he burned out or whatever the reasons were for stopping LCD
Sound
System.
Well, no, you bring up a good point. LCD Sound said some could have easily stayed an entity for the next 20 years and got out while the getting was good, which we can't say for, say, REM or U2.
Right.
Who way overstayed their welcome.
Gotcha.
But at some point, like at this point, why don't we listen to a song? I'd like to hear North American Scum. What I like about this is exactly what I'm talking about, where the tension builds. And, you know, it's not conventional in the way, you know, there are certain lyrical patterns that you expect that he subverts. So let's give that a shot. And we'll talk.
Slaves at all trades till we think we might die. Far from North America, where the buildings are old and you might have lots of mimes. I hate the feeling when you're looking at me that way. Cause we're North Americans, but if we act all shy, it'll make it okay. It makes it go away. Oh, I don't know. Where to begin when we're North American, but in the end make the same mistakes all over again. Come on, North America.
Well, Shane obviously hates this record.
I don't hate the record. I really don't. Like, I like what you... I did not mean for that last segment to turn acrimonious in any way. In fact, one of the things that I was thinking while I was writing these notes is, like, I'm not even ambivalent about the album. I'm disinterested in it. It's just such not anything I want to listen to. I would have turned the station, but there are some songs, and two of them, Ryan, were two of the ones that you liked the most that I really liked on this record.
And those were?
Someone Great and All My Friends. Like, those two back to back.
No,
songs.
I think there's a triumvirate of songs, which one of which is, to me, is the one we just listened to, and they all come three in a row, and I think it's the heart of the record. Like, I don't think it's a flawless record, but I think it's good. And
flawless is a strong stance. I mean, you don't even have to.
Well, I mean, you know how I feel about Yo La Tengo Electra Pura. Like, it's flawless, like, except for track 13. But beyond that, like, it does no wrong.
Mark, were you familiar with his work before this?
You know, it's kind of... I feel that I was one of these people that discovered this late. Didn't really get into LCD Sound System.
Well, I did. I discovered them late for sure.
Like, until I found out that they were going to be no more.
I knew exactly one song while they were an extant band because my then girlfriend, and this is a weird story, and Mom, if you ever listen to this, sorry.
I'm gleefully rubbing my hands together now. Yeah. Do tell.
No, my ex-girlfriend likes to do what she would call underwear dance parties, and she really loved the song.
Oh, my God.
Dance Yourself.
It's like PG-13 rated?
Kinda, yeah.
Oh, Christ.
Well, this is the perfect soundtrack for that, though.
But, like, we would strip down to our skivvies and, like, dance in the living room, and she really loved the song Dance Yourself Clean, which is not on this record.
Right.
But that's the only song I knew by them while they were still around. And then later on, she and I broke up, and I started working at this restaurant where, like, people who are 23 to 27 years old love this band.
Right.
And they would just, like, play their stuff, and, like, it was all kind of a universally accepted fact that they were good. And I was like, who the fuck is this? This is a good song. Like, this is another good song. And, like, I wasn't exposed. I was too fucking old.
Right.
And so I've come around to it, and, like, I dig it.
So I definitely see the appeal on that, but I'm going to let you continue.
Well, I was just going to say that one of the things that I read with, and offhand, I can't think of it, but there was some sort of connection with John Cale. And I would just say that this song we just listened to, it really makes sense. Like, I can really hear a lot of John Cale, kind of that that Velvet Underground.
That's J.J. Cale. John Cale's the composer.
No, John Cale.
Yeah, John Cale's the guy that writes like weird minimalist music.
I'm so confused right now. But
that's what I'm here for.
Yeah, I do think that there. I can see like a sort of Velvet Underground component in that. It's just.
Oh,
it's,
yeah. Okay, I see what you're saying. Never mind. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm gonna let Shane keep thinking J.J. Cale is the guy, though.
No, well. John Cale was writing minimalist music, was a minimalist composer. Am I wrong here?
No, no, he did that after the Velvets. Yeah,
I didn't think that was the same.
All right, let's circle back to the Velvets.
All right, never mind. Sorry. My bad.
That was a band that didn't sound like anybody else before it. And I do think that's the case with LCD Sound System.
And
it doesn't sound like anybody else.
And kind of Velvet Underground.
Yeah. Well, and kind of looking at the background,
I don't hear that at all.
That definitely don't sound like Velvet Underground.
The crazy thing is, looking in the background of the record, you know, this thing was nominated for a Grammy and the Mercury Prize. So, I mean, it's one of those bands that started out really big in the UK.
How was it nominated for a Mercury? I thought you had to be a
British
resident
band?
Of the... Yeah,
I don't think so. I don't know. But this is, you know, this is what I was researching here. I'm sorry, the shortlist prize. I always get those two confused.
Oh, okay.
Shortlist, Mercury. Sorry. So the shortlist prize. And it but this is the funny thing. It lost out to The Reminder by Feist.
Yeah.
Sad trombone.
Yeah.
For you guys, maybe. That's a far, far superior.
But it's kind of one of those things where it was right on the cusp of, I think, general conscious consumerness awareness, not yet.
Well, the songs are too long to be played on the
radio. Yeah, and that's the thing. But that, I think that's why the kids liked them, because
they could just get fucked up and dance to it.
And this is one of those perfect records to do that too.
The beats are great. I mean, that's the thing. That's the overall thing that I take away from the. I mean, like I was very familiar with them prior to this album coming out. And had this, and like every time, like had the same reaction that I have to that song that we just listened to right now. Like the first time I heard Daft Punk Is Coming to My House, like I could not stop that song quick enough.
I love that song so much.
It's so.
See, I liked it too.
I love it so much.
I have no idea what fucking world universe you people are living in. Like this,
dude. That is a perfect. Like dance song for
it's
like
a,
being
it's got a great
it being like 1:15 on a Saturday night and
but
you're
why would you
up.
But why would you want to sit at home or sit in your car in like
oh listen. I do that also, like I play it in my car. I play it at home and hit repeat and that
whoopee like funny, like it's fucking nails on a chalkboard, that song is to me.
I'm loving this so much.
You are, because it's gonna be my pick next.
Oh, is this revenge?
And I am totally altering whatever.
Hey, man,
I wanted
you to like this. I wasn't doing it to hate you.
Oh, I know.
You know, the other weird, well, I don't know if it's weird, but I think the other fascinating fact is Murphy is our age, if not like
he's
a year
older.
Or two older. No,
yeah.
He's in his like mid
How
to late 40s.
Met?
I'm 43.
Okay, I'm 42. Shane's 40. Mark, you're what?
Why do we have to have this conversation?
40
so yeah, I think 44. He's what, 45, 46 maybe?
Yeah, so yeah. Basically our age.
He's in our...
He would have been at the generation. Same high school as us.
Yeah. Probably known the same people. Probably got punched in the face
a
couple times. But it's in interviews and things I've seen of him. I mean, he's a super smart guy. You know, what?
Obviously.
Yeah.
He plays like 12 different instruments on this record.
Absolutely. And I think, to me, it's... And I'll go back to what you were saying about the organic sound of the record. I think that's it. It's kind of one of those things that, for me, I don't mind the tongue-in-cheekness of it. And I don't... You know, that stuff can be a little bit of overbearing on some people over there, Shane.
Sure.
But I think it's... To me, it's part of what the identity of LCD Sound System is about. And those fans that love it, and they eat it up. So,
you know, I guess I think it's the same thing. It's sort of how I feel about Talking Heads. Like, it goes back to, it's not that I dislike it. It's more that I don't get it. And the same thing like with Talking Heads. Like, I don't get it.
The Talking Heads songs that I like, I love.
Yeah.
And a lot of it, I'm just like, eh.
Right. Well, you're sitting. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to kick you, Mark. He's glaring at me now. I kicked him under the table. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot, and I think there's a lot of bands and acts and artists and, you know, stuff that people seem to universally acclaim That just for whatever reason,
there is a bandwagon aspect that, you know, like happens with some bands that you feel like you'll be dispraised. Is that a word? You feel like you'll be, you know,
shunned.
Okay. Yes, thank you. Shunned by your community if you're, say, a critic who doesn't like a band that everybody says is genius.
Yeah, it would. Anytime anybody tells me, and I've heard this many, many times, that they don't like the Beatles, I can't take them seriously as a human being anymore at that point.
Well, I don't understand that. Like, there's but I also don't understand when people say the Stones were better than the Beatles. Like, no, they weren't.
No, they weren't. That's a ridiculous statement.
Can I just detour real quickly? Because when I was in high school, I guess I was probably a senior in high school, and I came home from school one afternoon, and this was around the time that the Beatles, was it one
anthology?
Anthology, I think, maybe came out. So like 89 or so. And I walk in, and there had been some sort of PBS special going on that week about the Beatles, and my father sitting in his chair. And he basically just turns to me and says, "You know, your mom and I were talking last night, and those Beatles, they're all right."
Thanks, Dad.
Yeah. You know, son.
No, that was like when my dad came to me, and I think I told this on the Fleetwood Mac episode.
You did, but I can't remember what it was.
It was like 2002, and my dad had seen a Fleetwood Mac concert on PBS, and he goes, "Hey, you know that Fleetwood Mac's pretty good. Have you heard of them?" I was like, "Yeah, man, they were like the biggest band on the planet like 20 years ago."
Love it when they clue in.
You don't.
Well,
yeah, so,
let's listen to another.
Yeah,
song.
Because I mean, Shane, clearly this particular song we just listened to kind of rubbed you.
Yeah, it's just annoying. There's a way that I'm trying to think of somebody to draw a parallel to that has like a has an off-putting voice that people really don't like, but I do, and I can't think of one.
Well,
right.
Some people are like that with Robert Smith,
Morrissey.
Certainly, people are like that with Morrissey. I'm like that with Tom Waits. Like, good songwriter, can't stand his voice.
Sure, that's a lot of what puts me. It's that his the way he's got like this whooping and growling, and he goes back, and it's kind of guttural, and he goes back in the beat a lot, which is cool, whatever. But I just don't like the sound of his voice. Number one, but number two, there's like this comedy thing, this repetitive, it's all really repetitive, everything's really really repetitive, and like I just don't get the joke a lot, and it's got to be a joke because there's no,
I think there are certain elements of it that are
no
jokey.
I'm not saying it's a joke band, I'm not saying it's fucking Weird Al Yankovic or anything, but
okay, so but we come out of this song and we go into the next one, and you said that this is one that.
Oh, yeah. So what did you want to
say? Someone Great.
So Someone Great is the next song.
Someone Great is a yeah, that's, and that, again, there's a repetitive thing, but Someone Great is interesting to me because one thing we didn't touch on a minute ago is that a lot of these songs, I think, are in the collective musical consciousness now, and a lot of that is because of commercials. They'll use pieces of stuff in commercials,
if you want to make a living in music, you kind of have to do now.
But they're because you don't know those songs on radio play, you just know snippets of them, and also on Pandora, LCD Sound System pops up, or Pandora, all kind of internet radio services, LCD Sound System pops up on a myriad of bands, and so you'll oftentimes some of these songs will get dropped in, and you won't think that you know them, or
and then you're like,
I've
heard this
think
somewhere.
I knew them, yeah. And one wouldn't think one knew LCD Sound System at that well, but then the song's like, oh, I've heard this song thousands of times.
Well, what I like about them is that they stand apart from other electronic based artists, which are just fucking like repetitive computer based trash. And I don't see this that way.
I don't see them as an electronic band. I mean, there's a lot of keyboards in there, but I mean, you say electronic, like I don't. I mean, like, when you say electronic band, I think of like EDM. Like, I mean, like I think
well,
of
I mean,
like.
They're definitely using like some sort of assistive drum.
Yeah, but I mean,
there are definitely
the
computer based elements to the music in every song.
The rhythm is very consistent and steady and.
Well, you know, the whole DFA collective there that they started in the early 2000s mixed a lot of the punk rock ethics, you know.
So dance punk. Of,
yeah.
And I just don't know what the fuck that is other than this.
I don't know. I think there was a lot of bands that were kind of doing it in the late 70s that kind of they take cues from. But it's more of, you know, obviously this guy got really good with programming things and putting together these arrangements this way, and he can feel the word
arrangement. Yeah. Like this motherfucker can arrange a song.
It's well,
Shane doesn't like it.
I think,
but like he can put together.
Let's listen to an arrangement that Shane does like. Actually,
let's do that.
Someone great,
nice. See why you like this one, Shane. It's definitely a little bit more melodic structure in it versus the electronic stuff. But we were kind of talking off mic. To me, this one is a total almost Giorgio Moroder kind of ripoff at the intro.
Oh, completely.
You know, that's
you know, he put out
Italian
an album
disco.
Like, Giorgio Moroder just put a record out.
I have no
out.
Idea who that is, by the way.
Yeah. So he did a lot of sound. He's probably apparently known for soundtrack work and
Donna
in
Summer.
The 70s, and he was a big disco producer. He was Italian DJ, like, and I think the record you're talking about, probably, I forget who's on it, but it's like all these people who were influenced by him are coming back and
and
kind of paying tribute to him and on that record.
He produced it at least. I mean, obviously he's not like the performer, he's the producer. But an album that he hasn't done a record in years and years. Anyway, we're off the
topic. So a lot of that, the production value in that kind of reminds me of that, but also reminds me a lot of this song in particular, Vince Clarke, who, you know, was in Depeche Mode. And
that's actually like a band
Erasure.
That I kind of kept coming back to is Depeche Mode. Yeah. It's like a band that used a lot of electronic elements to make something that didn't sound inorganic.
Yeah.
And that's what I dig about this
project
/ band / James Murphy.
And that's probably why Shane likes this one the most. I think it's mainly because there's a lot more melody. And the buildup is not doesn't pound you over the head. It just kind of slowly shifts in the gear, you know, second.
We did hit that 5-minute mark, and Shane looked at me and said, okay, how much time is
that?
I mean, again, like, God damn, does this motherfucker, like, understand when a song is supposed to be over? I mean...
Well,
and that's every goddamn song on this record is 7.5.
Shane Bartel is a pop songwriter.
Okay, but that doesn't... We're not talking about me. What we're talking about is LCD Sound System. And I don't mind 8-minute long songs in the context of a record. But, I mean, if you were Led Zeppelin and you were every single record on your... or song on your record were like a song about the Hobbit, you know, or whatever, after a while, it would get annoying even to the most diehard Led Zeppelin fan. You don't have, like, every song is 6.5-7 minutes long, and it's all repetitive. It's not going different places. It's staying exactly in the same place.
Well, I see what you're saying. I have to be in a mood to fucking listen to No Quarter. It's not something like, you know what I want to listen to right now while I'm driving the car?
No Quarter.
No, exactly. Well, and that's a good example, the prime example of... You know what they were. They were drug songs.
He's just doing the same. Again, it's the...
I don't think it is as repetitive as you think it is. I mean, it is, but it changes incrementally over the song. Maybe not enough for you.
The key word is incrementally.
I do think the songs evolve, and, like, to me, they evolve enough. Shane, they don't.
The length of the song, that's just a minor annoyance. I mean, there's just a couple of, again, like, it's not like you keep like ganging up on me like I hate this song, this album, and I don't hate the album. I just have like two big beefs with it, and one is that the guy can't make a goddamn song under fucking, I mean, there's one song that's 3 minutes and 55 seconds long, and that's the shortest song on the record, which is whatever, but most of them are 6 minutes, 7 minutes, 8 minutes long, and it's a lot of nothing going on. I mean, okay, look at this. Paranoid Android, like, is a song
that's a really long song.
It's a really long song that develops a lot through the course of the song.
Certainly, and that's a better song than any hook on this record, and I'll give you that.
I'm not bringing it up in the sense that it's a better song or a worse song. I'm just saying, you're saying to me, like, you know, the songs do change. They develop incrementally. Okay, fine. Well, whatever. If that's your bag of worms,
but what's going on, like, that is developing, to me, is compelling enough for me to want to stay with it.
It's just...
And most electronic-based music is not like that.
It's not... Okay, number one, you keep saying electronic. It's not electronic. It's not electronic music. You know what? We'll go and listen to some fucking electronic music right now in the break. Let's listen to Avicii while we're in the break. We'll listen to some Skrillex. We'll listen to electronic music. This is not electronic music, Ryan.
Okay.
Even if it's one dude, it's a band that has a couple...
Go like, back in and... post and substitute dance.
No.
Or electronic.
Would you?
Is all I mean.
So hip hop is there's a lot
just
of electronic instruments and that.
Yeah, I'll just record the word dance.
Are you gonna say that that
put it back
see,
in?
Now,
and post.
I think we're now arguing over fucking, you know.
This is semantics. At this
yeah, exactly.
Semantics. And it's not semantics because it's important that. You just keep saying this over and over, like you have it in your head that this is more interesting than most. Granted, if it were an electronic band, then it would be less repetitive. But
it's not a traditional rock
band
format.
There's a keyboard in it occasionally. So there's one in The Cure. There's one in The Doors. That doesn't make them electronic bands. This live drums on almost every single song on this. Like, is, I mean, what is your flash point? What is your, how does it become an electronic band?
A lot of samples. It's dance based.
There's no samples in this.
Oh, they sample themselves, like loops.
I don't understand what you mean by electronic.
Well,
I don't know. All right. You know what? This is a good time to
get. We are getting into
a
semantic discussion.
It's not semantics. It's actually, you're talking about a genre of music and conflating it with another genre of music, and it makes no sense to me. But anyway, this is a good time to get out of here. Let's go to the intermission.
Let's do the intermission. Woo-hoo! And Matt has on a whopper of a song.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We'll come back to this in just a second. All right.
See you kids in a bit.
Bye.
So for this week's A Few Minutes With, we're going to talk about a serious problem. And this young man who we're listening to this week is representative of this problem. And Matt, you selected this week. So can you tell us a little bit about what we're dealing with?
Well, it's a common problem that the younger men of our generation have had. We had a little bit of fun, maybe a little too much drinking.
Hennessy in particular.
And then you take somebody home, and you're not really sure the next morning if things got down
and
dirty.
Anyone home.
Yeah.
That's apparently
yeah, because
led to
you wake up and you're like,
all of a sudden,
wait
there's
a second.
Evidence.
There's evidence.
There's evidence.
Yeah.
Mystery panties.
Pink panties. In fact, and not panties. P-A-N-T-I-E-S.
No. These are panties.
P-A-N-N-I-S.
Yeah. Because if they're pink, they got to be panties.
Yeah. Panties.
Yeah.
So
thank you for exposing us to this. I would have gone my whole life without...
We could have been exposed to a lot worse.
You know, here's something that I find slightly ironic because, you know, we definitely... we haven't had enough R&B on this show. And I've been saying that for a little while. In fact, last week we did Corinne Bailey Rae, which is an R&B-ish
genius
song.
Fucking song.
Not as genius as this.
I don't know if I'd put those two artists in the same category.
It's a different kind of genius.
I would say it's, yeah, different kind of genius.
Absolutely.
So this is Shandozia, who I've never heard of before, but I will tell you this.
And that's about 99% of the population.
Yeah, well, they're doing
99.9% of the population.
They're doing something wrong. As am I. Because let me tell you this. Today, I listened to a review of D'Angelo's new album.
Right.
And if people think that shit is soulful, ain't got nothing on Shandozia and Pink Panties.
So here's a little backstory why I brought this in. I think this is pretty interesting. At the time, I started working at Warner Brother Records. And Warner had a great history at the time of great R&B and soul acts that you know, throughout its history, whether it's Prince or Roger and Zapp or, you know, any of the stuff that they kind of really cultivated and ingrained in the culture. This was signed to a subdivision called Quest Records. And I don't know if anybody you know who ran that record label. It was Quincy Jones.
Okay. I remember Quest. Like, it's like QW.
He has a pedigree.
Yeah. So, you know, the guy
and Warner has a lot of, like, sub-labels.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember that, dude. He had a show, like, a detective. He was, like, a medical coroner in the 70s.
That was Quincy. That was just
Quincy.
Oh, right.
You're close. Also a dude that produced Thriller.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the same dude?
Yeah, that wasn't Jack Klugman. No, that
Jack
was Quincy.
Jack Klugman produced Thriller?
Yes.
Wasn't he?
Totally.
Is that how they got Vincent Price?
Can we stop?
So the funny thing about is you know, when I got there, I thought, wait a second, this can't be you know, the biggest record label in the world is what they're actually getting behind. And, you know, Quincy Jones, this guy. But, you know, it was sort of an inside joke because...
Did Quincy Jones produce this track?
I don't think he did.
It's not bad sounding.
Yeah.
Oh, it sounds good.
But it is kind of pedestrian.
It was their attempt at trying to get an R. Kelly for Warner Brothers.
Well, we should listen to it.
And
let's listen to it, and then I want to come back and listen to more of the story. Yeah, okay, we just have to let people in on what we're talking about.
This is insane, but I'm really happy about
Ryan
it.
Ryan shaking his head, trying to come up with superlatives for it.
I know I have lots of things to say, but I don't want to say them before people have had a chance to experience
it. You have to experience it.
You have to experience it. And Matt, when we come back, we have to have you tell us the rest of the story.
Okay. How the hell am I supposed to remember when I was gone from Hennessy? Lord knows I don't mess with chicken heads. So I pray she was a dime piece. Somebody help me sing.
Somebody help me sing.
Somebody help me sing, yeah.
Somebody help me sing, yeah.
Somebody help me sing.
Somebody help me sing.
Somebody help me sing, yeah.
Somebody help me sing. Buy some panties on my
panties on my floor.
But
I don't remember how they got that dough.
Might be because I had too much to drink. I know that there is panties and
they came. Girl, you got me on to withstand. Are you that panty villain? Yeah. I tried. But my mind just keeps on slipping.
If anybody is listening, and if your panties is missing, girl, if you think you can fit up.
What were you saying? It's a Cinderella story. Number one, so this song was released in 99, I believe.
99, yeah.
And it was one of the things I didn't know it was that old of a song, and one of the things I wanted to tell him the whole time, because essentially the gist of the song is that he woke up, had consumed a copious amount of Hennessy the night before, didn't remember going home with anyone, and no one was in his bed when he awoke.
Panties.
And he found a pair of pink panties. So one of the lines in the song... On its floor. One of the lines in the song is, so if your panties is missing and you think you can fit them, it's a Cinderella story.
It's more like you think you can fit them.
Oh, right. Well, yeah. But
but it's that classic Cinderella story of the glass slipper was lost.
Prince Charming.
Finds his glass, over, try on panties. These panties. We'll figure out if it was you and
one of the things. So I was thinking
happily ever after.
Have some Hennessy.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about this, I mean, because if it were around the time, it was extremely nascent. But this sounds like this dude read a funny Craigslist post and then made this song around it. You know that? Because I'm like, well, why didn't you just post a shit on Craigslist? Like, wanted.
can I posit a question real quick? Is this a joke? Is it a joke? Because I have no fucking idea. Like, to me, this is...
Whoa! I thought you were revealing your true British heritage there for us. Wow, you're just slipping in and out of accents.
No, it's true.
Like, he's from Fort Wayne, not Britain.
I am so not from Fort Wayne.
Oh, he's going to scratch your eyes out.
Yeah, it's true. but to me, this is Dick in a Box meets R. Kelly. And I don't know...
It's funnier than Dick in a Box.
Oh, man, I don't know.
Dick in a Box is funny, don't get me wrong.
Dick in a Box is pretty fucking funny.
This is funny.
Yeah.
I think this is funnier because
serious.
This is
for real.
This is actually serious.
Yeah, if this is for real, that's amazing.
Well, and then it's for real. I mean, a lot of the people behind this song and this record, like we mentioned earlier, Quincy Jones, this production group called the Vibe Squad, who was really active.
VYBE.
Yeah, who was really active in the mid '90s and the late early 2000s. Andre Harrell, who was involved directly with Uptown Records and Puff Daddy's, you know, mentoring. And
yeah,
there's a guy, Jay Brown, who's still out there producing records by Shakira and Neo and a lot of modern day.
So this was an earnest attempt.
This was a real fucking deal.
They were heavy. So did you hear about that? Was this like making the rounds?
When I got to Warner Brothers Records at the time, the R&B department was shit. I mean, they were throwing basically, let's see what we can throw
anything
on the fucking dartboard and
see what.
And this happened to be one of the things. And it's just, wow. You really get, you know, I don't want to say this was the decline of the modern music industry, but it's
that would be a bold statement.
It's one of those things where people invest in something and they think, and after you listen to it,
how much coke were these guys doing that signed this?
Yeah, and you have to say who gave this the green light, the money, you know. Obviously, you know, it went out there whenever they tested it at radio and did zero. But the best thing about this, besides the song itself, which gives and gives, and you keep listening, I'm like, am I really hearing this? But the best thing is Warner had the foresight to mail out the record with an actual pair of pink panties.
Oh.
So that's
there's the punchline.
And so the beauty about it.
So this went out as a single.
The record went out with a promotional piece of pink panties. And the thing is, we had three or four of the pairs around in our department, in the marketing department at Warner then. And
did you try them on to see if they fit?
Well, no, we'd hide them at people's desks, and it was kind of like we'd hide it
Were they printed with anything?
It said his name, Shandozia, pink panties on it. Okay. And so the whole thing was that if you got caught with the pink panties, you had to, it was a long kind of game where, you know, you'd bury it under somebody's files or something, and then they wouldn't find it for weeks. And then they're like, all of a sudden you hear, oh, you motherfuckers, you know. So it was a long
found
game.
The pink panties.
Found the pink panties.
Let's just remind everybody one more time in case that you had missed this or it was in passing, because we urge you to find this song online.
Oh, listen to it
In its entirety.
Yeah.
And so the artist's name is Shandozia.
Yep.
And the
There's
name
only like 6,000 YouTube
Well, we're
it's a crime.
We're going to mount. Not only are we going to mount,
we need to mount a
we're
viral
gonna mount
campaign.
A campaign. We're going to mention this song and artist in every somebody likes it for the foreseeable future. This will be mentioned.
We'll just devote 10 seconds to this song because it needs to find.
I want to listen to the rest
level
of the album.
Well, no, but let me bring this up real quick. And this is a true service that Matt is doing for the world. And I mean, you know, we could have lost artists such as Nick Drake, such as Shuggie Otis that we were just commenting on, had it not
that
been...
That Rodriguez guy? They made a whole documentary about him, Rodriguez?
Yep. Had it not been for true devoted fans of music that should have changed the world but flew just under the radar. Yeah. And Shandozia's pink panties... I think we can. We're going to add to that list. I will make it a single-minded devotion.
Shane, I thought if you step to me with your bullshit, I'm going to have to ask you please to quit was like the most greatest thing I'd ever heard. I stand corrected.
Wow. That was a pretty good one. What was the name of that?
I don't remember the name of the band now, but it was a promotional CD given out to both Shane and I.
At South by Southwest. It was a rap band, and we listened to it.
It was a white boy rap band.
If you step to me with your bullshit,
I'm going to have to ask you please to quit.
I think we mentioned that like basically.
That's very polite for a rap song.
Really,
I know. That's
polite.
What was great about it. Talked about this before on the show. That's the best part about it.
Yeah.
Like, please
hey,
stop.
Man, just cut it out. Yeah.
You know,
if you don't
please
mind.
Quit.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go back to the show. We're going to go back to LCD Sound System.
After we finished that little bit, I read a little bit of a review that I found online with allmusic.com. The reviewer was William Ruhlman, and just shared the very first phrase and the very last sentence of this review, and I want to say this again. And we're talking about Shendozia, who we just listened to.
Pink Panties.
Pink Panties. This is a quote from the review, right?
This is a review of his album. And it starts off, the review starts off this way. R&B hip-hop singer Shendozia isn't exactly reinventing the wheel on his self-titled debut album. It goes on to talk a little bit about the songs in there, including Pink Panties, and ends off by saying, none of this is particularly impressive, which reflects more on Vibe Squad's inability to come up with distinctive material than on Shendozia, who is an agreeable enough singer.
And that's the pull quote that I want on the record. If I'm a record executive, agreeable enough.
No, they used to have CDs would be like, this album featured him, this album, like this song featured in this movie. No. All you want is just one, the sticker placed on the vinyl that says, Shendozia, agreeable enough singer, all music.
Agreeable enough. Allmusic.com.
That's like somebody, that's like Mark's dad. That's like, your mother and I agree that the Beatles, they're an all right
band.
Those guys are all right.
Like, that's why Mark wanted to read that is because, well, I wanted him to read it. Let's just face facts. But it's because his dad wrote that. He's agreeable enough.
Agreeable enough.
Okay, so we're back on LCD Sound System. And look,
I
sound so disappointed in that.
I knew you were going
to
say that.
It's hard to follow up Pink Panties.
That's what it was. It has nothing to do with the material we're talking about now.
And let's be honest, LCD Sound System is a better band, project, whatever, than, what's his fucking name?
Shendozia.
Let's at least agree on that. But to Shane, it might not be as entertaining.
You know, LCD Sound System is an agreeable electronic band.
You beat me to it. Look, I mean, I don't understand how, like, I knew that you were going into this fucking show spoiling for a fight, but, you know, you've made me do and say things that I wasn't planning on, because, and again, I touched on this just a little while ago. Like, I'm relatively, I said I wasn't ambivalent, and I'm not ambivalent. I'm disinterested. You know, like, I really don't have strong feelings about it. If any of the songs came on the radio, I would just
turn the channel.
Yeah. I mean, I will hate listen to fucking Creed songs sometimes. I hate watch
Fox News.
I hate watch Bill O'Reilly. I was going to tell you that. Yeah. We may have talked about this before, but I've hate.
Wow.
I used to play this game where
this
I was
where
like,
how long can I take it?
No, yeah. I used to put up Bill O'Reilly and it was like, I thought it was ha-ha funny for a long time until I met Skylar and she's like, this is the least funny thing I've ever encountered in my life. Stop. And so
Skylar's
I stopped.
Shane's wife, by the way.
Yeah. So, I will hate listen to Creed, and sometimes I listen to things on the radio just to figure out why anyone listens to it ever at all. I'm not going to put this in that category, but I won't lie and say I've never felt like that before about them.
Well, okay, so the triumvirate of songs that they're playing.
The mighty triumvirate.
Yes, exactly. Thank you, Patton Oswalt. Like, I feel like are absolute solid songs. And one of them I feel like we should get after right now. And
it's a triumvirate. That there are two great songs in the three that you're talking about.
You're allowed to think that.
Well, this next one, this was actually, you know, I mentioned early on that I was kind of a late entry into the LCD sound system.
Well, you mentioned something about a video that. So I don't know anything about this
song. Is how I was introduced to them initially, and it wasn't directly because of the band or the song, but more so because of Lego. And
that old story.
So this song, All My Friends, apparently this is a very well-known video in the realms of fans of LCD Sound System. And one particular fan decided to recreate this video shot for shot using Lego. And that's how
I've heard about this.
So that's how I was introduced to LCD Sound System initially. And I agree that this is my standout song on this album. I do feel like this is kind of, for me, the end of the album. But we could talk a little bit more about that.
Definitely peters off, and we'll talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
So why don't we listen to...
But what I love about this is like it has like two notes on a piano, and it still manages to build tension.
This song is amazing to me because it takes all of the conventions that he does, and he does have internal conventions. Again, we talked about Daft Punk earlier. I mean, that song, that beat, that shuffling beat with the claps in it, you could substitute that for what was it, North American
Scum.
I mean, they're essentially the same song in a lot of ways. Whether or not you like them or not, I mean, they have the same beat.
I like both
they have
of
the
them.
Same right, yeah. And yeah. They're just very, very, very similar songs.
Well, certainly they're made by the same dude for sure.
Okay, well, so he needs to broaden his palate. But anyway, but
they're not even a band anymore. Like he isn't even doing this anymore. Like,
he should have broadened
his palate.
You either
like it or you don't, and you clearly don't. That's okay.
Well, don't anyway. So what I'm trying to say is that this song is interesting to me, that a lot of the conventions that I find, the internal conventions that he has created consistently throughout his records, mm-hmm. or throughout whatever, there are a lot of those in this song, and for whatever reason, it's not as grating. Oh, wait, it's that he's not yelping and barking and shit in the way that he does normally, and so I don't know.
So is that like your...
That's my glowing...
Is that your analogous like, why are the Beastie Boys yelling at me kind of thing?
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
I can't appreciate the Beastie Boys. They fucking yell at me.
Okay, that's a great example. Matt, you haven't heard this before, but Ryan hates the Beastie Boys because...
I don't hate them. Can't listen to them more than a song at a time.
You say...
Because, that, like, right? Stop yelling at me.
This is very analogous. Like, right. You're right. Like, LCD Sound System is my Beastie Boys. You know,
wow.
I think...
That is so fair.
Ryan thinks the Beastie Boys are... I can appreciate LCD, except the Beastie Boys are so much more imaginative and varied and creative. But having said that...
I would so much rather listen to an LCD Sound System record than a Beastie Boys record.
And that's what I was going to say. Having said that, I gestured at Ryan. He said that. But yeah, I mean, Ryan feels like the Beastie Boys are yelling at him.
No, I mean, I feel like Rain Man when I hear them more than one song at a time. Like Rain Man in the airport, you know, he's like, ah! Stop it.
That sounds like an amazing album title.
You well, know, I feel like Rain Man.
If Cat Stevens like came, like Cat Stevens, Rain Man in the airport.
I'm probably going to piss off a lot of people by saying this, but I have one band that in particular does that to me, and it's CCR. And I just can't Creedence. Stand. I can't stand Fogerty's voice for shit.
I love how you use the colloquial, though.
Oh, Jesus Christ. It's like, you know, I'd rather get dick punched 1,000 times than to ever hear that motherfucker's voice.
No, that's hyperbole right there. There's no, if I dick punched you once right now, yeah. you would be like, take it back, take it back. I totally want to listen
play me some CCR.
No. No. I'll tell you who will stop the rain. Just fucking don't do that again.
Tell you what we need to do is play.
How about we listen to the song?
All My Friends.
All right, let's listen to All My Friends. And so it starts.
Friends, which to me encapsulates a lot of what I love about this record, in that with a small amount of tools, like, manages to create a lot of tension and, to me, excitement and,
wait,
and building.
I just need to stop you for a second. I was saying that all his friends are a small amount of tools that create a lot of tension. Like, they're all alcoholic and they're just all dicks and they create a lot of tension in the
social
circle.
That's exactly what I mean, Shane. Yes, thank you for bringing that up to my attention. What I was trying to say was that with like two notes on a piano and sparse percussion creates a lot of tension.
But actually
you're Freud to me right now, and it turns out like I was like wanting dicks or something. I'm not sure exactly where you're going with that.
Whoa. Wow, that changed quickly.
You're just all over the map on that one there, aren't you?
I do not think that this song is representative of the rest of the album, however. I mean,
it's good.
I get where you're going with the tension.
Well,
yes,
what
that
I like
builds,
about
I
w- LCD
I think you could
Sound
say
System
that about a lot of bands, a lot of albums, they build tension in the songs. I don't think this song really represents everything else that's on that album.
I guess you're right. I mean, it's more sparse.
I think the only reason you're saying that, I mean, and I'm just speculating. I'm not trying to say like, hey, Mark, I'll tell you what your opinion should be. But I feel like maybe that's because it in an album that didn't have, and this isn't, I'm not slagging on them/him in any way, but there's a level of consistency throughout the body of work that has relied less on melody and more on percussion, and more on it sound like if you were listening to most people's albums, they would strive for less of sameness in their body of songs. So that's why that stands out for you, in my opinion, on this.
Yeah,
like, there's a lot of samey all the way through this. Not to say, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing on this album. That's definitely what he's striving to do.
But it builds. Like, there's something about it. There's, what, two notes in that piano part? But the way that it's constructed builds to, which to me, there's a tension in it that keeps my attention as a listener.
There's a very strong and consistent vocal melody in this song, which I don't think you find anywhere else. Also, I feel like this song is not, I don't know, I get a much more tongue-in-cheek kind of vibe from every other song on this album.
There's definitely like a sort of bit of humor in it, but it's not so hit you over the top. Like, what's that goddamn Jack Black project that I hate so much?
Tenacious D.
Tenacious D. Like, I don't really like my comedy and my music mixed together. But if you want to insert...
So that's why Daft Punk is coming over to your house,
Well, okay, like, actually, a buddy of mine pointed this out to me, and, like, I didn't know what... I just thought that was a weird, random song, and this buddy of mine, like, pointed out that it's probably, at least to his ear, and it makes sense to me, it's like a kind of parody of a guy who's...
If you need an explanation of a fucking song's content...
I'm actually okay with that. I'm okay with there being... a little subtext for me to have to, like, go figure it out.
I'd love to read you my notes that I made on the day the music died. I've got them right here.
Thanks, Shane. I do want to listen to one more song. We're not going to keep you guys much longer. The song I do want to listen to is New York, I Love You, But You're Bringing Me Down. And the reason is because this, and I think it's actually kind of a shitty song.
Wait,
it's not shitty, but like shitty for this record.
Matt, you were... Wait, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Ryan. Like earlier, when Ryan was having a cigarette during one of the breaks,
yep.
You were talking a little bit about DFA and stuff that I hadn't read. And I just wanted to, before we get out of this...
Yeah. I think a lot of what they were doing when they started...
Well, no, who they? Who were...
Well, it's Murphy, and I think it's the drummer, and then there's the other guy that's the principal in DFA Records. It's the three guys. They put this stuff out under their name, and then they've got the Death From Above guys, those two guys, and then they had, oh my God, who's saying the House of Jealous Lovers?
House of Rising Sun?
House of Jealous Lovers. That was also on DFA.
That's pretty, you?
Yeah, you got
you
me,
just
brother.
Did. Let's just say Matt Munoz.
Well, they were it was that scene, and they were, I mean, this was Pitchfork was coming all over themselves with every band DFA was putting out.
Apparently so.
I mean, they called All My Friends the number one track of 2007. You know, this was how much they loved
it. I don't have a problem with that. I mean, maybe not the best song of that year, but like, I think it's a pretty fucking great song.
No. And it goes back into transitioning into the song we're about to hear. It's for me, it's not even a weird song as it should have been left as a B-side, I think. You know, I don't think, to me, it's like you need
New York, I Love You?
Yeah.
Can I say one thing right now? In Rainbows was released in 2007. So well, to say that, anyway.
I'm not a giant In Rainbows fan. I don't think it's terrible, but like it's nowhere near OK Computer.
It's her second best album.
I would agree.
All right. So, kids, I think The Bends, easily second best album. Anyway, we're not talking about Radiohead right now. We are talking
I'm
about...
I'm just saying there's no way you put up... I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, so we are going to listen to New York, I Love You, But You're Bringing Me Down. And the reason that I want to play this song is because, man, this song would be so much better if Kermit the Frog sang it.
Oh, wow.
Can I read my notes? He thinks he's being clever, but who wouldn't just skip it? Skipping meaning the song. And essentially what I mean, because you have all this dance party, and then you have this piano ballad, this morose piano ballad at the end of the song. And he's not, you know what he's saying? He's saying what anybody else, he's essentially saying in the song, like, New York, you used to be dirty and interesting, but now you're clean, you let the cops into people's apartments, and... all of this. I mean, that's what he's saying, but it's the same. I mean, Ryan, we live in Austin, Texas, and we've lived in Austin, Texas for a long time. And every 7 to 8 years, it switches over to a new paradigm, and people are like, you should have been.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was so great back then, man.
The Electric Lounge.
It was so great back when the Vulcan Gas Company was here. Yeah.
You just don't know.
Yeah, I used to be able to fucking... piss on streets, smoke doobies out of both nostrils, and do whatever you wanted. You can't do that now.
Can't? That's not...
Hey, so my point
is... you can't?
No. My point is, listen to this song, but insert Kermit the Frog instead of James Murphy.
Wait, I have one more thing I want to say about that. I'm sorry to interrupt. Quit stepping on me.
I want to go straight... Go ahead.
Let me say what I'm saying. I'm doing this with my notebook while you're talking. Like, I'm not trying to step all over you.
Can't you hear the paper ruffling?
I done heard
I'm not trying to fan you. It's like 42 degrees outside. Like, Ryan, take a bath. You're like the preacher. Like, and I'll tell you this song. Okay, there's just a line in this. You know, we listen to this song, and I'll say it when we get out.
Let's
you're
do
be that.
That
annoyed about it.
Why don't we hear the song?
Bye.
New York, I love you, but you're bringing me down. But insert Kermit the Frog if you want to enjoy it more.
New York, I love you, but you're bringing me down. New York, I love you, but you're bringing me down. Like a rat in a cage, pulling minimum wage. New York, I love you, but you're bringing me down. New York, you're safer, and you're wasting my time. Our records all show you were filthy but fine. But they shuttered your store when you open the doors to the cops who were bored once they'd run out of crime.
I mean, sorry, Ryan. I didn't, I wasn't trying to make you upset about anything tonight. I wasn't trying to push your buttons.
No, I'm so upset. You have no idea. We are taking this outside.
I think I'm trying to read the script here. Yes, Ryan, you have been so mean to me all night. Screw you, dude.
I'm sorry, man. But wait, fuck you. None of this matters.
So, what's it called? New York, I love
New York,
you,
but I love you, but you're
bringing
me
really
down.
Boring song. Oh, yeah. Okay. Right.
New York, I love you, but halfway through reading this title, I'm falling asleep.
I'm already falling asleep. So, yeah. That thing is that they. Well, there's lots of things, but aren't there? So we're talking about how, like, you know, in any city you live in, you know, every 6 years or, you know, people, new people that had lived there for however long they'd lived there.
You should have been here.
You should have been here back in the day. So this is my favorite song. And by the way, I did no research into how long is he a native New Yorker? Like, I don't know that.
He's North American scum.
He is North American.
Well,
scum.
No, by yes,
I don't as think are so. All of us. I thought he was from like some northeastern state.
Well,
or
okay, so I'm interested to know that because he's talking in the song. He's alluding to the New York of the 1970s. And again, we established he's not that much older than me.
Right.
So he definitely didn't. Unless he were 4 or 3 years old, he didn't live in the New York of the 70s. But he's alluding to that. And then he says this line. This is the ultimate cranky man line for when new people are moving into a city. Take me off the mailing list for kids that think it still exists. Talking about New York.
In reference
to New York.
Right.
Shut the fuck up.
Pre-Rudy Giuliani New York, man. Like when crime was rampant and there was fucking graffiti all over the subway.
Well, at this point, he's basically almost 8 years into post Giuliani. So, like, I want to find out when the fuck he moved. Like, did he move to New York in the Giuliani era? Because
he's from Princeton Junction, New Jersey.
Okay, so not far away.
Yeah, not far.
He's a bridge and tunnel guy, but yeah.
Okay, he's a bridge.
Born in 1970, so right. he is my age.
Yeah,
yeah, but he wasn't hanging out in the fucking city, seeing shit go down in 1978.
No, he was like fucking like on the swing set.
Like he essentially was in college when Giuliani took over New York, or you know, it's you know we're cleaning up
cleaned
Times
it
Square,
up. Yeah.
And he did, you know, he did
and,
do
and
that.
Like say what you want about Giuliani, he did do that. I don't love that man, but like,
well,
that's not what we're here to talk about.
I mean, I think the bottom line, aside from the commentary of how, you know whatever about the city, it's just a song that. I think he put on there just to fuck with people. I mean, because it makes no sense. You know, you have this great little dance record, and all of a sudden you're like, hey, I'm going to get all Tom Waits for a second and
I mean, okay,
spread some vibe on you.
I'll give you that.
I wouldn't have thought of that at all, but it is an annoying song, but that makes me like it more the way you just said that. To consider that, here's one final, weird thing I'm going
to
do.
Way to frame it. So what I'm going to say is, if I had to rate this record, I'd give it an 8 out of 10. There's plenty of stuff to love for me on this record. I know Shane doesn't feel the same way. I'm so okay with that. We will remain friends.
I wouldn't pan it. I mean, I would give it a 5 out of 10, or maybe even 6. It's not horrible.
We were looking at this earlier. Metacritic, it's 8.5 out of 10 from the myriad of sites that have reviewed it. So it's not that I'm right and you're wrong. It's just that
I'm in the minority. Is that what
you are in the minority of people who have listened to this record and tried to take a measured approach
I'd love to see how many people in 10 to 15 years, how many people, if I were to go to every one of those critics and be listen to this and reassess it. Because,
you brought this up earlier about Hole, Live Through This, which we listened to and received similar acclaim when it came out, and so doesn't stand up. But I feel like in 10 years from now, I'm still going to love this record.
Well, you loved it more than you did Hole when it came out in the first place.
That's true.
But I'm all right, so we're getting out of it. Thank you, Matt.
Thanks for having me. It was a blast. It was fun.
Yeah, let's do it again.
Yeah, it's fun.
So next show, Kevin's coming back. And
do we know what we're talking about next week?
Well, we're not on next week.
Oh, that's right.
It's a Christmas break. Yeah, so we're doing a Christmas break. Now, Kevin may come in and change that, and you can just replay my words right now and be like, ha, 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 fuck you. But as of right now, we're taking a break for a week. Everybody's got to do holidays with their family.
Mm-hmm.
I would hope so. And then when we come back, we're going to do the Somebody Likes It Christmas in January.
That's right.
It's going to be our mixtape. It's going to be Kevin's Welcome Back, where
after he has spawned.
After his new roommate finally settled down.
It's true.
And so Kevin, Ryan, myself, who was that guy? Me, Chain, and Mark, we're all going to pick a couple Christmas songs, holiday songs. And then we'll do a little bit on each one. We'll do a mixtape. And then after that, it's going to be my week for the record.
Excellent. All right, kids. Let's get out of here.
No, I was going to say what I'm going to do, but I'll save it.
Save it.
All right. We'll get out of here. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
So long.
Somebody likes it.
Bye-bye.